I thought it was totally nuts, and I thought at first I was being deceived. It was a ruse. People started confiding in me. They approached me. I have plenty of current and former senior intelligence officers that came to me, many of which I knew almost my whole career, that confided in me they were a part of a program. They named the program. I've never heard of it.
Forget Little Green Men. Forget Area 51. Forget Bob Lazar. And get any sort of conspiracy out of your mind for just a second. It's no longer just speculation or even a secret that within the U.S. Department of Defense lies a shadowy UFO reverse engineering and crash retrieval program with access so exclusive, only a couple hundred people in the 80-plus year history of the program has ever been read in. People like David Grush and legislation like Schumer's 2024 NDAA legacy programs have helped turn a former conspiracy into an outrageous fact. Sometimes it feels like details, names, and operations of these programs will never come to life. That those in the know in the defense industry will cling to secrecy until their dying breaths. Though actually receiving transparency may sometimes feel like a distant fever dream, you know your host, UAP Gerb, has you. Join me today, and we will venture into Project Moondust and follow the astounding paper trail of one possible DOD UFO crash retrieval program. Edward J. Ruppelt conducted the first ever official U.S. government study into the UFO phenomena under Project Grudge in 1948 to 1949. He went on to serve as the director of Project Sign and Blue Book, the subsequent U.S. government official UFO investigation programs in the 20th century. During his time as director, Ruppelt concluded UFOs had a, quote, interplanetary explanation. On the 24th of April, 1952, Ruppelt suggested programs parallel to the official USG investigation were, quote, conducting a more complete investigation. This same conclusion was derived by J. Allen Hynek, the scientific advisor to Project Blue Book. We talked about him in the Alien and UFOs Obscure Oddities Iceberg Layer 2, so if you want to know more, read there. But Hynek additionally said that alongside Blue Book, there were other classified programs going on studying UFOs. One of these projects could have been an inconspicuous crash retrieval program. One that, unless you look hard enough, you'll never know existed. And that, of course, is Project Moondust. The first mention of Moondust can be traced back to 1961 in a U.S. Air Force document titled AFCIN-1E-0 Draft Policy. This proposal suggests that the USAF 1127th receive collection responsibility duties for the USAF's established program for investigation of reliably reported unidentified flying objects within the United States. The memo also lists one project that has historically had this duty. That project is Moondust, which has the authority to locate, recover, and deliver descended foreign space vehicles. And as we can see in this 1967 review for the Assistant Chief of Staff for the Intelligence Community, which details the functions of the 1127th USAF Field Activities Group, Moondust is shown to not just be a proposal, but exists, and has historically dealt with some terrestrial space vehicles. In fact, in the 1967 year, Moondust captured a total of 49 fallen Soviet space objects and 17 U.S. space objects. And this is followed by a large redacted portion of the memo. Now, we know that Moondust had real collection responsibilities with Soviet, American, and redacted space vehicles. So let's start to take a look at some of Moondust's work. As early as 1961, Moondust was in fact investigating UFOs and acting on UFO reports. In this internal memo, in Pakistan, on April 25th, 1961, Moondust recorded observations of three cigar-shaped UFOs flying in a close delta formation above Karachi, Pakistan. But Moondust wasn't just investigating UFO reports. In fact, it was actively engaged in UFO collection. Let's travel to 1968 in Nepal. In this memo, the Defense Intelligence Department monitors a crashed circular metal disc discovered in Nepal. 4 months after, the State Department cable titled Moondust writes to the DIA, 1127th, and Wright-Patterson Air Force Base that a diplomatic visit to Kathmandu, Nepal, was a, quote, fishing expedition for info on space objects. Additional cables show Royal Nepali Army showed photos of these space objects to U.S. offices. A possible cover story was then constructed here of a crashed satellite, despite NORAD and NASA data showing a 100% successful satellite launch rate in 1968. Unfortunately, the trail stops here, so I cannot tell you if this circular metal disc was actually recovered by U.S. entities. Now, let's fast forward a little bit to the 1970s. In Canada, in 1976, a memo achieved via the Freedom of Information Act shows that Moondust wrote to Canadian officials requesting photos of space-related metals originating from a non-U.S., quote, satellite. That would be of particular interest to USAF Foreign Technology Divisions at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base and to the CIA's Office of Weapon Intelligence. Now, Canada has historically been very open on investigating UFOs and participating in UFO analysis with other Five Eyes nations, but that is another video for another day. I want you to take particular note of the last two entries and how various memos and cables have been written to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. If you remember an entry from Layer 2 of the Alien and UFOs Obscure Oddities Iceberg, you'll remember that Wright-Patterson Air Force Base is connected with the phenomena. Wright-Patterson is often seen as a hub where crash retrievals of UFOs are stored. Think of the Roswell case. Allegedly, the crash materials were sent to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And think of Senator Barry Goldwater, who asked Wright-Patterson officials to see the room where, quote, it was stored, and was laughed off and told never to ask again. Now, if we fast forward to 1978 in New Zealand, Moondust investigates space fragments found in New Zealand described as spherical, or like a pressure vessel. Note how this pressure vessel shape is very similar to Commander David Fravor's Tic Tac sighting, in which he describes the craft he observed as similar to a propane tank or pressure vessel without any inlets or outlets. And finally, we arrive at my favorite case involving Project Moondust. Everybody has heard about the Roswell crash. Now, not everybody knows most countries have their own sort of Roswell story, in which some sort of anomalous craft has hit the ground and some sort of retrieval is underway. You can think of Canada's Shag Harbor, for instance. Maybe I'll make a video on Roswells around the world if you're interested, but you may have never heard of the 1978 Bolivia UFO crash. This alleged retrieval was brought to my attention by the work of the UAP Caucus, a legislative group on UAP initiative backed by members of Congress, including Representative Tim Burchett, Rep. Anna Paulina Luna, Rep. Eric Bertelsen, and Rep. Jared Moskowitz. The story, famous in Bolivia, goes, on May 6, 1978, at 4:15 p.m., thousands of people near El Taller, Bolivia, witness a cylindrical object crash into the mountainside, creating a sonic boom that was heard up to 150 miles away and cracked window panes as far as 30 miles in radius. A local army corporal named Natalio Ruiz actually witnessed the UFO, saying it flew above his head and it resembled a gigantic wine container emitting a trace of white smoke. Bolivian military and three jets were dispatched to check the wreckage. Upon discovering the wreckage, the local military and police were quoted as saying, "Our men have discovered the object and inspected it, but have received no further instruction or further action. It is a dull metallic cylinder, 12 feet long with a few dents. No one knows what is inside it, and we are waiting the arrival of various technical commissions. A NASA expert is also expected to arrive tomorrow morning. And of course, two U.S. Army Air Force officers, Colonel Robert Simmons and Major Jesse Hayes, arrived. Subsequently, secret documents finally obtained through the Freedom of Information Act were sent to U.S. Secretary of State Cyrus Vance. In this document, Vance writes that appropriate government agencies have been contacted regarding this crash. And I'm sure that you can guess the appropriate agency, Moondust. Moondust received a film showing the object by the Bolivian military and were tasked with monitoring the situation. Unfortunately, the trail of Moondust's involvement with this fascinating case ends here. I don't know if they retrieved this craft or did nothing else. I don't know, and it absolutely eats at me that I can't find out what happened. Let's skip forward to 1992. New Mexico Senators Jeff Bingaman and Pete Domenici made inquiries to the Air Force about Project Moondust. In response, the Air Force said that there is no Project Moondust. These missions have never existed. The senators responded with documents challenging this, and the Air Force revised its previous statement acknowledging the existence and function of Moondust with regards to UFOs. Then in 1994, Senator Domenici requested 11 documents pertaining to Moondust from the Air Force. The Air Force claimed that the projects no longer existed, nor do their files. Classified reports that may have possibly existed were destroyed. But this is categorically false. Why would the Air Force state that documents had been destroyed when requested by a U.S. senator? Why did the Air Force deny the existence of Project Moondust? And why did they cling on to claiming that any record of the program was destroyed? I've thought about this. And do you remember in the Wilson Davis video when Admiral Thomas Wilson claims that in the early 90s, special access programs were reorganized to hide the crash retrieval and reverse engineering programs within SAPOCs, basically making them inaccessible to everybody? When did these senators ask for documents on Moondust? The mid-90s. Were these documents destroyed and any sort of involvement denied by the Air Force occur because of this reorganization and compartmentalization of programs? I think so. It's also important to note that in this time from 1969 to 2008, Project Blue Book to OSAP, there was no official U.S. government UAP investigation group. So this is what I'd like to consider the dark ages, the completely hidden era of UFO investigation. The Air Force clung on to denying the existence of Moondust. And that is where our paper trail ends. It's quite plausible that the Air Force destroyed the majority of files pertaining to Moondust in order to hide a crash retrieval program of UFOs. My friends, thank you for joining me to take a look through Project Moondust. I hope you learned something today. I hope you learned that, you know, even though sometimes it may seem impossible to crack what the United States government and defense industry and intelligence industry have been up to in regards to UFOs, it is possible with enough digging. I want to know in the comments what you guys think. Do you think Moondust has historically been, or was at least at one point, responsible for collecting UAP? Or do you think it was just involved in collecting foreign and domestic space vehicles? Because I do not. I absolutely do not. There's a couple other programs such as Zodiac, Blue Fly, the CIA's Office of Global Access, and a couple more unacknowledged programs I'd like to cover in the future, so stay tuned for that. But please, if you don't mind, give a like and subscribe. It really helps the channel, and I'm astounded at how this community has grown so far. It's incredible to see people with the same passion for UFOs that I have kind of engage in the comments and watch these videos. So I gotta give you my deepest gratitude, because I am forever thankful. I will catch you guys for the next video, and thank you for tuning in. Bye.